We'll hear argument now in the case of Sawyer against Atlas Heating and Sheet Metal. Mr. Klotz.
Colts, Your Honor. Thank you. Good morning, and thank you, Your Honors. Thank you, Chief Justice. May it please the Court and opposing counsel. My name is Henry Colts, and I represent the appellant, Atlas Heating and Sheet Metal Works. This is a case where the plaintiff appellee seeks to greatly expand the tolling afforded under the American Pipe and Crown Cork and Seal line of cases. In doing so, to impermissibly blur the line between and commingle state and federal law. For two reasons, the plaintiff's case should be dismissed. Alternatively, if it is not dismissed, then Sawyer's claim should be limited to a case which is individual in its nature and where no possibility of class certification exists. And we ask this Court to establish a bright-line rule to that effect. I'll begin by addressing the fact that the timeliness of Sawyer's claim is predicated upon a prior case. That prior case is known as the Park Bank litigation. Park Bank was a Milwaukee County Circuit Court case. It existed and was filed entirely under Wisconsin law. In fact, one of the allegations in the
complaint under federal law. It was filed in state court, but it raised a claim under federal law. That's rather important for this appeal. It raised the very same claim that's being raised in this suit.
The claim that was concerned in the Park Bank case was enabled by a federal statute.
Yeah.
That's very true. However, even a part of the pleading that was filed in the Park Bank case initiating that said, federal jurisdiction does not exist. It's at paragraph 8 of that complaint.
There was a misunderstanding about the junk facts statute around for some years till we cleared it up. Many lawyers and a couple of federal judges believed that junk facts cases had to be litigated in state court, even though they arose under federal court. We disapproved that line of precedent. But the state case, the first state case, was a claim arising under federal law, and so is this one, and they arose under the same federal law.
I agree with that. The case does arise and is enabled by a federal statute under federal law. However, the case itself was filed and existed procedurally under Wisconsin law. And to the extent that it involved a putative class action, that class action would necessarily have been controlled by Wisconsin's class action statute with stat 803.08. And that's an important distinction to make.
Is there any parallel in Wisconsin practice to Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 23E?
The specific of that statute.
23E says that a suit filed as a class action can be dismissed only with the permission of the court, and then only after a hearing to determine whether that's appropriate.
And we addressed that in our initial brief. We believe that that was the law. Now, the response brief says
How did the state court permit Park Bank just to unilaterally dismiss the class action? That's not compatible with Federal Rule 23. That's why I asked whether the state follows that doctrine.
I do not believe it does. And the reason for that is simple, is I don't think that the Park Bank litigation was ever truly a class action case.
It was filed as a class action. The state court neither certified it nor declined to certify it. It just didn't reach the question. Would you just answer my question? Does Wisconsin have a rule that is parallel to Rule 23E?
There is no part of 803.08 that would be a parallel to that, and I'm not aware of any other law that exists in the common law. And I think, and I do not, although Park Bank was filed and had a discussion within its pleading of class, I don't think it ever reached the point of becoming a true class action. And that's in Baxter versus Palmigiano, the United States Supreme Court said, quote, without certification and identification of a class, an action is not properly a class action. This court, the Honorable Richard Posner in Walters versus Edgar said certification
of a matter who writes the opinions of this court.
Okay. This court said in Walters versus Edgar, certification of a class action comes after the suit is filed. And that's important here because in the Park Bank litigation, there was never an identification of a class. There was never the certification of a class. In fact, there was never even a motion requesting that either of those factors occur.
It doesn't really matter for purposes of the tolling doctrine.
I respectfully disagree, and the reason for that is this.
How can you disagree? In American Pipe itself, the first suit was filed as a class action, and the judge then decided it would not be certified as a class. That's why the subsequent suit came in. Right? So on your view, therefore, the first suit was never a class action, and therefore the American Pipe doctrine doesn't apply to American Pipe itself. Well, the Supreme Court obviously doesn't believe that.
That's a fair point, but that's not the position I take. American Pipe and the Crown, Cork, and Seal line of cases exist, and they center around Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 23. And that's what this court said in the Copper antitrust litigation case.
No, it is not what this court said in Copper. Your brief completely misrepresents that decision. What was vital to that decision, this is why I began by saying it was vital that this state suit rested on federal law. The holding of Copper antitrust is that a suit in state court under state law does not affect the time to sue in federal court under a different law, under federal law. The problem that this case, however, the state suit was under federal law, under the same statute as this case. And that's what the debate on the panel in Copper Antitrust was about. It was about whether a suit under state law could extend the time to sue under federal law.
The portion of the Copper Antitrust case that I'm referring to is where there is a discussion of Rule 23 creating an expectation for putative class members. And it says that federal rule creates an expectation that once a case is filed, which ostensibly is claimed to exist under Rule 23, that putative class members can expect that based on Rule 23, they can effectively wait until that class determination is made, and then if there's an adverse class determination, their statute of limitations is told. The reason that I do not believe that the American Pipe rule and the Crown, Cork, and Seal line of cases would then apply to the state court action and would not allow tolling based on a prior state court action is that there is no Rule 23 in Wisconsin. So that expectation that putative class litigants would have based on Rule 23 simply cannot exist in the Wisconsin circuit court or state court forum. And
the same sort of expectation can exist, however, even though the state court class action rule doesn't perfectly mirror the federal one.
If the Wisconsin legislature saw fit to pass that type of a law.
It's not required. The members of the class in a putative class action have the same expectations that the named class member in the state court class action will protect their interests in the same way that federal class members do under Rule 23
if
in a putative
law,
class action before the certification decision is made.
I'm not sure that Wisconsin law says that. There's been no case that either side has cited that stands for that proposition. I think commentators discussing American Pipe and Crown, Cork, and Seal acknowledge that it's a very powerful rule. Even the concurring opinions and the justices writing in those concurring opinions realize this is a very powerful rule that should not be abused. And to get to the point, some states, such as Virginia, which is actually, I believe, a commonwealth, the Commonwealth of Virginia does not allow class actions. Other states like New York allow them, but only in very narrow, limited circumstances.
The class action device under Wisconsin law is a representative suit, right, in the same sense that a federal class action under Rule 23 is a representative suit. Isn't that right? And if that's correct, then the expectations are the same.
I don't know that they would be the same. The expectations exist.
Maybe I should have let you answer one question at a time. So
sure.
The class action device under Wisconsin law, under the Wisconsin Code of Civil Procedure, mm-hmm. is a representative suit in the same sense that a Rule 23 class action is a representative suit. Yes or no?
To that narrow extent, yes.
Yes, okay. So now the second question, why doesn't that make the unnamed class members' expectations the same?
First of all, I think the expectations that exist in the American Pipe and the Crown, Cork, and Seal line of cases are expectations predicated upon Rule 23. That's a much more robust statute than Wisconsin has. We've laid that out in the brief. Wisconsin's statute is one sentence of 49 words.
How is it more robust? Rule 23 does two kinds of things. It authorizes class suits, and then it imposes a lot of limitations on when they can be certified. The Wisconsin statute authorizes class suits and doesn't impose any limitations. Now, why would one describe the one that imposes a lot of limitations as more robust? It's more detailed, certainly.
Well, in this instance, Chief Justice, I think you spoke to it earlier, for instance.
I'm not Chief Justice. I am the Chief Judge of the Court of Appeals. We are all judges.
I apologize. To speak to the point you made earlier, I see that I'm into my rebuttal time, so I'll try to finish this point quickly. But for putative class members where no class determination has been made, under the federal rule, there would be this mechanism where there would have to be notice sent before the case could be voluntarily dismissed. There's no such requirement as that under Wisconsin statute.
There's actually no such requirement in Rule 23E either. You don't have to give notice before a voluntary dismissal, but the judge has to make a decision about whether that's appropriate.
Okay.
Notice has to be given before a settlement, not before a voluntary dismissal.
Yeah, I'll reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal unless there's any more questions. Thank you.
Counsel? Bach.
Good morning. May it please the Court, my name is Philip Bach. I'm here on behalf of Isaac Sawyer and the putative class. The Court should affirm the District Judge's denial of the motion to dismiss. Pursuant to the American Pipe Doctrine, the commencement of a class action alleging a federal claim, whether in state or federal court, should toll the limitations period for absent class members. And
are there any statutes or rules about class actions in Wisconsin other than Section 803.08?
I'm not aware of
that yet.
That's the only one I know of except for the limitations period statute, which we also cited. But that I believe that's it, that one paragraph. Park Bank commenced a class action about the same federal claim, the same class, the same fax transmission, and decided to abandon the class and ordered that the case be dismissed, not settled. And when Mr. Sawyer moved to substitute in as the class representative, the judge wouldn't allow it. And so Mr. Sawyer filed a new case in the same court 3 days later. And the difference was this time the defendant decided to remove the case to federal court. And then they moved to dismiss for on statute of limitations grounds. Because tolling creates no potential for unfair surprise here, the defendant really hasn't argued that it's unfair to have tolling. They just say you can't have tolling because the case was filed in state court. But with the commencement of the Park Bank case, Atlas Heating knew that a class of people were suing them about their junk faxes that they had sent in 2005. So if the court reaches, so the district court should be affirmed on that ground. If the court reaches the second point about whether you can have a second class action, we submit that this court should find that you can, that no other circuit has said that a second class action is impossible if the first class was never even ruled on in any way. And the judge in this case never, we're not trying to re-litigate class certification. This court said in a case called Thorogood versus Sears not too long ago very clearly that you get one shot at class certification, and that's understood. But the class and the court system...
That's understood. What do you think the bearing of Smith against Bayer Corporation might have on this case?
I'm not familiar with that case, Your Honor.
It's pending in the Supreme Court, argued in January, and it contests one of the things that's at issue is that very proposition.
Whether you get one bite at the apple or...
Or thousands.
Okay.
And the argument is that if the class is not certified in the first case, then members of the class can't be bound because no class was certified. The opposite conclusion, one taken by this circuit in Bridgestone, Firestone, and later cases, is that as long as the putative representative was adequately represented the interests of the putative class, the decision is binding. Now, I wonder, you obviously haven't read the briefs in Smith against Bayer, but it's quite conceivable that what the Supreme Court has to say will matter.
And that sounds like a case that involves a much bigger issue than this case, I think, because this is, do you get one chance?
Or smaller, it is could be different because that case involved an injunction against a pending state litigation. So it brings the Anti-Injunction Act into play as well.
I understand. I really don't have any other comments except that I think if this case isn't abusing the system, if there is a case that abuses the system, that the courts know how to put an end to that. This one is just the defendant convinced the first class representative to abandon the case, and that shouldn't abandon the claims of all the absent class members. So if there aren't any questions, I'd be finished.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bach. Anything further, Mr. Colt?
Perhaps the reason that this case was likely accepted as an interlocutory appeal was the issue that the Seventh Circuit has remained silent on whether or not litigants may stack class actions. So I'd like to address that point briefly. We urge this court to adopt a holding similar to the Sixth Circuit's decision in Andrews versus Orr. We think that rule makes perfect sense, and it alleviates some of the problems that we would see if American pipe tolling is allowed to extend and be predicated upon prior state class actions or putative state class actions. In Orr, or Andrews versus Orr, the Sixth Circuit said, it is the filing of a class action and the pendency of a motion to certify that suspend the running of the statute of limitations period for putative class members, and the period for filing begins to run anew when the class certification is denied. Nothing less will suffice to maintain the period of suspension. I think that's a good rule if we're going to allow the American pipe tolling to be predicated upon state cases, because those states might have varying requirements as to when the actual class certification motion must be made. And so if we predicate the tolling upon that, it alleviates the problems that come with looking at different sets of class action laws, and we can say as long as there was a prior case where there was an actual motion filed seeking class certification, then from the time that motion was filed until the time it was denied, the statute is tolled. It makes sense of the whole matter. I'll conclude my comments there. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.